Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.
Point of View.
Legal matters. All right, it's 5 minutes after nine. As you know, on a Wednesday, Ntabiseng Tubazana is here to answer all your legal questions. I can see it's been that kind of week.
It's been a very, very long week.
So folks, it's a good time to call in now, right? Not at the end of the show when we're about to leave, just so that you can be thorough with your responses. So send voice notes. You don't have to tell us your real name. You can remain anonymous if you like. 063-688-0959. That's where you can send your questions. You can call and engage if you want to do that on 086-00-00959. Tabi saying you want to speak about that doesn't mean that you can't ask any question, by the way. We're just starting a topic. Criminal case and lack of fidelity fund certificate.
Yeah. So remember, I think it's 2-3 weeks ago, we spoke about attorneys having to be compliant. So this particular matter, it is Mr. Kulwane. He was an attorney for accused persons in a criminal matter. So when it was found out that throughout this entire, the accused new legal counsel, Mr. Sizisiwe, I beg your pardon. Yes, Sizisiwe. That's how you say
Zisiwe.
It, I guess. Zisiwe. Oh, Jesus. You see, it's been that kind of week. But anyway, when he came on record, he discovered that the previous attorney did not have a fidelity fund certificate. So what he wanted to do was to refer the matter for a review. So the difference between a review application and an appeal.
Yes.
An appeal, you're appealing in criminal cases and in sometimes in civil. But let's talk about criminal. In criminal matters, you are appealing the conviction or the sentence or both.
Okay.
So you are disagreeing
with the decision in the end.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The legal principles that were applied, the fact that the facts of the matter are not looked at properly, stuff like that. Whereas review is per procedure.
Got you.
Of the court.
Yeah.
So it has nothing to do with the
outcome of the case itself. Yeah.
It says the procedure was not followed. That's why in labor matters, you hardly hear that from the CCMA to the labor court is an appeal. No, we are dealing with review, whether the process was substantively fair or procedurally fair, right? So that is how reviews are dealt with in our law. So then now it's on review. And in review, now the court must determine whether or not the previous attorney's lack of FFC was tantamount to this matter being applicable to be heard for review. So now,
and
the judges in this matter were like, listen.
So okay, yes. Let's go back.
Yeah.
The significance of the fidelity fund certificate.
Yes. So when you go and appoint an attorney, I think I've said this so often.
Check.
You go and check on the LPC website, whether this person is a practicing practitioner, right? If they're practicing, this person ought to have a practice number. With that practice number, you can check if this person has an FFC, Fidelity Fund Certificate. Every single year, as practitioners, we have to apply renew our license.
You have to pay your fees.
Yes. You have to pay your fees. You have to go and get audited in your trust account. And if the audit checks out proper, then LPC gives you your FFC, which gives you a right to practice for another year. So it's an every single year process.
Was the issue here that for that particular year, 2014... this particular person had not renewed their certificate, or that it was completely non-existent?
So the judgment says when he started the case, he still had a valid FFC.
A renewal.
For 10 years.
Maybe the books were not... they were not booking.
It means that he never sent his books at all to the...
Maybe the auditors as well. Well, there was a problem, maybe.
There was a problem. And then that's why the judgment here, the judge said, we don't understand how the LPC did not get wind of this for a full decade. But at the end of the day, the clients are liable for their own choices. They were the ones who were supposed to make sure that their attorney was qualified or had a right to appear. What makes this thing non-reviewable is, one, because his FFC was valid when he started the case.
Okay.
And then two, the client was the one that chose him. It's not like it's something that,
So who wanted a review?
The new attorney. So the new attorny technically
of the same clients.
Same clients, yes.
Ah,
so I think the new attorney wanted to kind of start the matter de novo.
Got you. Had it been the other way around?
In that,
had it been a third party?
Had it been a third party, I believe from what I've read, the way the judgment goes, it wouldn't have mattered either. Because they're saying that when he started, he was valid.
No, Ntabise.
That's what they're saying.
You see, so where I have a slight problem with that is that I may have started clean and then decided to chow people's money in the interim, therefore not making sure that my books are in order and which is why I don't have a certificate. In other words, I maybe became corrupt along the way.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean, I don't know, I think there must be protection.
There's the
because
judgment,
if I so is my job, and maybe ask it this way.
Yeah.
Is my job for someone who, for instance, may want you to assess or even monitor my trust fund, or maybe you are even an executor, right? Or a trustee. Is my job to keep asking you every year to send me your certificate?
No. It isn't your job to do that, to be quite
honest.
So
if I asked you the first time when I wanted to be your client, you proved it, you provided it.
Yes.
Should I keep asking you every year?
No. Mm-hmm. So what the court is saying here is that it respects, where's this thing? It says that the decision to engage Mr. Kolwane reflects their autonomy in selecting legal counsel, a cornerstone of fair legal proceedings. That's the first thing. And it said the court respects this choice unless it demonstrably prejudices the trial without proof that the lack of an FFC directly impaired Mr. Kolwane's performance.
Altered
the trial's outcome.
I get it.
The accused retain accountability for their selection.
I think it's fair.
Yeah.
I think it's fair. So there was no direct link to this particular case.
Yes.
And the fact that this particular lawyer did not have their certificate updated.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but what is important about this is the fact that the LPC is now being held to book.
Good.
Because the LPC...
Yes, because they're supposed to look out for me.
Correct.
Yeah.
And now, if let's say... Unlike in this matter where there was no direct correlation with the lack of an FFC and a lack of this person's competency to do his work.
Yeah.
If it was the other way around, that it was a lack of competency as
and
a result.
And someone should have done an oversight role on that.
Then it would have been LPC. How is it for a full decade
that you didn't nobody... Take up, that Ntabise saying was dodgy.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Joseph is calling from Orange Farm. Good evening and welcome, Joseph.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Thanks for calling, Joseph.
Good. I want to ask a question about I want to sue a government department in SASA.
Yes.
Yes. So you know that the 370 that people get, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was receiving that, and then last year around March, they stopped it, right?
Uh-huh.
And then, when I called, they checked my information. Then they said, oh, no, there's like a number. Because like when I applied, there was an issue with my phone number. Like, there's no electricity. So, like, I used my sister's number. I used her phone. It was me who did the application, but I did it on my sister's phone.
Mm.
But I subsequently ended up getting my phone. Then last year, March, they cut it. They said, oh, it's because maybe the number, there's an issue there. Go and update your number. I went to an office. We had like an office, but they still did it. I did the thing. I received an SMS on my new number. My sister received an SMS on her number informing that there has been a change.
Yes.
Right, of the number. Right?
Yes.
And then when I called, they said, oh, no, you need to wait. You need to wait. There's like a list, right? There's a list of people who are changing their numbers. You're going to get a call, and then that call is going to like ask you security questions, and then we're going to update.
Okay.
Like, I called for weeks, for like all of last year, right? That's what they were telling me. Then around October or whatever, they changed the story. Now, all of a sudden, they were going to send me a link, right? Yes. And then with this link, I'm going to update my information, and then I'm going to take like a selfie. Then it's going to do a biometric and facial recognition system, right? But for it to work, I was supposed to go get a smart card, which costs money, right? I had to go like get a smart card. And then I got the thing, and I told them I have the thing. Then they told me that, no, the system is down. Apparently, the system of the verification was down for 2 months. I had to wait that time. And then when it was up, because I kept calling, like, I probably called those people like 100 times, right? And then, so then I eventually got the link, right? The phone that I'm using, I couldn't even open it, right? I called my sister, and she was like, oh, she lives in Pretoria. So it's like, I'll be around somewhere around there. When I come around, I'll pass by you, and then you can maybe try it on my phone.
Okay.
And then I took out the thing, yes, and then I put it on her, but it didn't work still. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then my thing is this, it feels to me like it's prejudicial that, because like the only thing that's wrong with my application is the number, right? It's like mismatching number. I don't know what number there is there. I had to like fight with them to get that number. But I don't know the number that they have on their system. They say they have my system number, but it's a secondary number. And then there's this other new number that I don't know.
Okay.
Right? And my biggest problem is this, right? Like, you know that asylum seekers also get this money.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes. And I heard on the radio, and I called them, and they confirmed this. I have a recording of this, of these people. So on the, or when asylum seekers need to do a verification themselves, because they are also supposed, they were getting SMSs that they are supposed to do a verification. But for them to verify, right, they just need to go to an office.
Have you gone to an office besides dealing with them telephonically?
They don't do it. They tell you straight up, you don't deal with 36. You know what they said to me? Like, I have it on 3 recordings where they say to me, you can go to an office and they can do it for you. None of the offices around me do it. And then a guy said to me, you know what office does it proper, is the head office. My sister lives in Pretoria, so I asked her to go check there. She said, they don't do that. These things work online. Like, I have 3 people telling me this, that offices do it, but they don't do it, right?
Yeah.
And, but the thing is, this system, this verification system requires a proper smartphone. You can't just do it with any phone. You need a phone that costs at least over 1,000, right? At least.
Okay, that.
Yes, and I was wondering, like, can I sue them for this? Because the reason the foreigners don't have to do any of these hoops, they know that a lot of these guys know how to sue the government. The reason they even received the certificate is because they sued them. They went to court and they sued the state, and the state capitulated and it gave them this money.
So are you fully relying on the 350 amount? There's no other source of income?
Well, I get help from family. But
I'm saying you don't have a source of income apart from that.
I don't work. I don't have anything.
Okay, it might end up being a bit expensive for you to sue the state. And if you're going to work, let's say for argument's sake, you're going to request an attorney to work on what we call contingency on your behalf. In other words, they get paid when you get your money from the state. We're going to be calculating from March last year to date, if you still haven't gotten your amount, which is not a lot for any attorney to work on contingency for, right? So if you go to legal aid, maybe they'll be able to assist because they work free of charge for you, that is. And but to answer you, you would have a right to sue the state. They are indeed prejudicing you. You have the right to claim that money. There is no reason as to why it is that you are not getting what is due to you. There's links that said you should get this money. In fact, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I beg your pardon, the correct section that would be applicable for you in the Constitution would be Section 34 of the Constitution, which is basically your right to be heard in any forum in the court with regard to any administrative issues that you are dealing with. But it's a whole process in court,
I
unfortunately.
Think go, legal aid is your best bet,
yeah.
I think. Joseph, and you wouldn't have to pay for it.
Yeah.
So if like a couldn't let's say don't court do what is this thing where
pro bono.
Not pro bono, like
even if that's the case, initially you wouldn't know, Pella, how the case is going to go.
Yes.
So you can't guarantee that.
Oh, so I would need to know first. But if I did win, I would be able. Would that apply?
Let's say after the fact.
And a court like order doesn't mean that if you spent, for argument's sake, if you spend 10,000 rand on attorneys, a court order is going to give you 10,000 back. No, it's not going to do that. It'll probably do it on a scale B, which means that, or party to party cost, which means you probably, from the 10 grand you paid, you may receive 2,000 rand after taxation.
But wouldn't be the reason I'm even in court is because I'm being prejudiced against. Wouldn't that count?
No, unfortunately. Cost orders work in a very completely different way versus what it is you're fighting for. And for the amount that would be due to you, which would be calculated 350 from March up until the day that the matter would be heard, then you've got issues. It will also I think it will fall within the match court. So because the amount is not over 300,000. So yeah, it's going to be a very interesting road and very long road for suing the state, but you do have grounds to do so. So you can go to legal aid, or the LPC has pro bono officers that can assist you in this regard.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
No problem.
Thank you, Joseph. Thank you. Let me take a voice note, Ntabise.
Potso ya ka ya ka Cheko is based Gadi Estates. If the other parent, wangwana, for example, ke motho re mona gore a khatala ngwana ntho tse jwalo, and then re a tseba gore motho well off in terms of gore o sebeditse, mara suspicion ya motswadi o mong gore a khathele ngwana a mo supporta etseng a etseng. Now ke batlo botsisa gore, can the law or a court of law compel the other parent gore a tlhaise estate planning ya hae, se buela gore ngwana a seka khawatheya? I hope I'm making sense. Ke a leboha.
No, not really. The court, through application, yeah, the other parent can force ill parent, yeah, well offered to maintain one, agar. And in the maintenance application, 6 months bank statements of both parties are issued in front of the magistrate. And then we can see just how much money this person makes. So liabilities and assets, and then we see now how much can this particular person afford. But with that being said, the court can't force to see if the parent has included the minor child in anything involving their estate. So but let's say the parent that has the money dies before this child turns the age of 18, the child, there's what we call security in deceased estates that the master would demand is given to the child while we are winding up the estate. Rabon. So that's the best way that could be covered, but they cannot be forced to show, Horina, have you put this child in plans to be taken care of in the future? Yeah.
All right. I want to take a quick break, Ntabise Seng, and then we'll be back with more of your calls and voice notes as well on 063-688-0959. You can call in as well on 086-000-0959. All your legal questions, Ntabise Seng Dubazana is here.
Point of View
on Kaya 959
with Pimela Modine.
What's yours?
All right, we continue with the legal matters with Ntabiseng Dubazana, 086-000-00959. Send those voice notes through on 063-688-0959. We really are here to take all your questions. No legal fees charged, so take advantage of this moment. Ntabiseng, we have another story to have a look at. Mm-hmm.
So, we've seen how social media seems to help people. Sometimes?
Yes, sometimes.
Other times it gets them into hot water. Mm-hmm. This case is about you getting yourself into hot water using social media. So, disgruntled employees, instead of following the correct forum, they're like, we're going to put you on blast when our employer. And then they go to social media.
Hey, I've seen people, and I'm just maybe speaking to young people who are getting into the workplace for the first time. I have seen a young person ethuga uboss la on status and and on X and whatever. And I'm thinking, okay, do you think the boss doesn't know? Because this young person was literally, you know, every minute she thinks this B word, this one thinks da 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 da. Obviously, we all knew who she's talking about.
Yeah.
Everybody knew. Mm. Yeah. Now she thinks she's denying me my leave. Now she's everybody knew what she's talking about. And how far do you think that's going to take you?
Because is it going to change the situation in the work front?
Well, it makes it worse, does it not?
Exactly. Mm. So this is what this case is all about. So the employees felt that, they are not being treated right. And
they were social media.
They were social media. And started posting, hey, when our employer, you did this. Hey, when our employer, you're doing that. You're not treating us right. You're doing this. All sorts of allegations you can think of on all sorts of platforms.
Hey, man.
But you can think of.
And they thought that was going to help.
They thought it was going to help, that the employer, if they're put on blast, they may change their behavior or
makes
their attitude
worse.
Or whatever the case may be. And then the employer decides, you know what, I've had enough. And then takes the matter to the labor court.
Yo.
Not just the CCMA.
Not even just a disciplinary hearing.
AISA to the labor court.
Wow.
And said, listen, I want you as the court to interdict these people.
What?
Because now they're putting my name into disrepute. My brand, my this, my everything is being tarnished as a result of this. There is no case that proves all of these allegations. They haven't gone to the CCMA to complain for that matter. All they're doing is posting on social media, this, that, and the other. And then the court goes like, you know what? Listening to the evidence of the employees, there may be some truth to it, but that's not what's before me right now, because they haven't taken this matter in the correct forum. I can't adjudicate whether it's true or not. But what I can see is that you're busy tarnishing this employer's name. You're busy going on and on and on without there being any sort of backup with your allegations. What you should have done is that if the second you find unfair labor practice happening, whether you've been treated wrong, whether whatever the case may be, the correct forum is to go to the CCMA. Let a commissioner hear your matter. Let a commissioner adjudicate. And let a commissioner give an award. And then you can use that award to in your favor to ensure that the employer stops treating you in a manner that you believe is not correct. But social media won't help you with anything. Instead, you're going to find yourself in hot water, wherein you now have to, you may be held liable to pay the employer for defamation of character. So it's such an important case for not just young people, but we see even people who feel like they don't have the mind to go to court.
Yeah, and I was going to say, you know, if then we backtrack a little bit and let us say, if I hear you correctly, the court was saying, even if your complaints are legitimate, because you will find that often people are saying, the intention was to either scare the employer or use social media as a tool to, you know, to get them to jack up their act or whatever, because we feel powerless.
Yeah.
Maybe we've raised these issues internally. We don't know what to do. Mm. Maybe HR is not doing their job.
Yeah.
We don't have a union. We feel unheard and we cannot go the legal route. There's always a way.
There's always a way. And the CCMA is always, you see, the CCMA is where attorneys are not allowed.
Can I ask this question?
Yes, ma'am.
This group, is one of their reasons that they felt they may be targeted individually? Did they sort of, was this a united front on social media?
Yes, it was a united front hoping that if more than just one, more than just five people are saying this, it will put the spotlight on the employer to say this employer is not doing right by us.
And maybe that's just it, that when you feel like you may be stepping on toes, you may be targeted yourself, what other mechanisms could they have used?
The court is saying go to the CCMA.
As a group?
As a group.
Okay.
You are allowed to do so. You don't have to go one-one.
Yes.
So you're allowed to go as a group to the CCMA. And
state your complaint.
Yeah. And allow the commissioner to do its job. And when I say the CCMA doesn't allow attorneys, what I mean is that when you go to the CCMA as an individual, you will be heard. It's during conciliation, this is where the commissioner now tries and mediates between yourself and the employer to see if there is a way to meet each other. So it's not on an individual basis. It can be the entire group can go there versus the employer. And if Lihlulana at conciliation, when it goes to arbitration, you may still not need to have a lawyer there. But the review, the award that comes out from the arbitration, that award you can use it to be enforced. It's as good as a court order. So allow yourself to go through that process. Don't be intimidated to think that if you go to the
Have you saying others will say, but you know, the employers bring their big gun lawyers, and sometimes they're more au fait with the process than I am.
100%. So that's why whenever there's issues happening, Legal Aid now does do labor matters. Mm. So go see Legal Aid, speak to them, let them advise you at least, so that you know what it is that you're going to do when you get there. So that you know the kinds of questions you must look at, like what the rules of the CCMA are, what questions you're going to be looking at, what does unfair labor practice mean, what does unfair dismissal mean, all these things. Get yourself equipped. So I think it's because information is not always readily out there, but you know, go. Even if you go to the CCMA itself, they will sit you down and tell
you. Explain it.
Yes, in full.
I've got a voice note that I want us to take a listen to.
Namo kenalebutata ka kantuya kuhaine. So this is what's happening. My mom and my uncle, two siblings. Mamaka ite nakwa batlantu during the apartheid years. She was then told hore mewa motho wa mme a ke se bane le ntlo o sena ntate. She then used the details that abuti wa gae, I think ID ya abuti wa gae and everything. So ntlo ya ko gae e ngodisitswe ka my uncle. So they've been trying to fix it over the past couple of years, but yeah, there's been hassles and stuff. So until Marome Waka last year at Lokofana, and then Husetse Musadi wa gae, but the wife is away. So my mother wants to actually close this so that Ntlo ya gae etle lebitsong la gae before maybe le mama lome a tlhokofala, because now o batla iqeto ntho e like get it over and done with. We've been taken from pillar to post. They've been taken from pillar to post, wanting to find out what to do. Others telling them, tshwanetse ba patale bareng sekoloto sa masepala ba setete ba se clear ebe 0-0. Only then they'll be assisted. So I'd like to know what is it that can be done so that mme wa ka ntlo ya hae ka bitsa ka lebitso la hae. Yes. Mama Lume are aware and she's willing to assist. No one pulling away from the other. I just need assistance for the guy exactly so that we can get it over and done with. Thank you very much.
Okay. So, firstly, I would find out at the deeds office how it was structured. Because, yes, it's very true. With the Black Administration Act, it definitely said that women could not own property. But what happened was that there would be like a list that the person whose name is right on top, who would then come beneath all of those things. Check with deeds office first and see what's happening there. Now that Malume has died, I'm assuming that his estate wasn't wound up. It doesn't sound like it was. And if it's being wound up or it has been wound up, in that the house is involved, because that house would be his. So what I would suggest is that the parties sign a redistribution agreement wherein it is agreed, basically, which is your mom and Mama Lume, to sign and agree that the property is fully going to be that of your mother. And then, yes, I confirm, the municipality is always going to want their rates, taxes, or whatever fees to be paid in full before the property is transferred. That one is 100%. I am very sure of it. But if it's in the master's office, it's being done through the winding up of the estate, it can be transferred with the assistance of a conveyancer. And if it's below, I think they've increased it. If it's below 1.5 million, somewhere there's no transfer cost and whatnot. You just pay the attorney their normal fee.
1.5.
You just pay the attorney their fee. There's no real transfer costs, and then you should be sorted. It should not be hard at all. So, yes. Find deeds office. After deeds office, if there's an estate, then you use that estate, get an attorney to wind up all of these things, and then ask the attorney to draft a redistribution agreement. It should be fairly quick after that.
Okay. So in Turfontein, hello.
Good evening, ladies.
Hi, how are you, Swoo?
This is Thames. Welcome back.
Thank you.
My voice is back.
Yeah,
it's load shedding.
I am back with a voice and all. Thank you.
Things are back to normal. Yep. So isn't that the same?
Yeah, yeah, that.
Tell me explanation, please. Extradition.
Extradition? Okay.
In South Africa.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's only us around the world. Marawaisa Sobolaganja, like Gupta, no luck. Bushiri. Instead, our citizens are going to him.
Like, they're following him wherever he goes.
Yeah?
They're following
him. And then, we can't bring him here in terms of our authorities.
Yes.
And now, AKA's case, there's extradition involved there too. Now, I don't know if we should hold our breath with that. Why is it so difficult? And just checking, like, internationally, it looks like the U.S. is the one authority that gets it right for some reason. Yeah, if you think about the WikiLeaks founder, if you think about the Huawei CFO and so forth, but is it generally a difficult thing to pursue, or is it just us not getting it right?
No, it's generally a difficult thing to pursue, really. It does take some time. And also, it depends on the agreements between the
also,
two countries.
It's also dependent also on the cooperation of the other countries, by the way. So sometimes it's not only up to us. It's the cooperation of the other country as well in assisting.
Yes. And also sometimes, uhupole, the criminal procedure in one country is different from the criminal procedure of the other
charges
country.
Charges may be different even.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
complicating matters. Completely.
Correct. So if it so happens that, let's say, we were, I don't know, embracing the death penalty, and then the country that has our fugitive does not, they may say, no, this is our citizen and we don't adhere to the death penalty.
Sometimes you have countries actually, especially those who do not have a treaty, fighting over the individual to themselves prosecute the person.
Yeah.
So they will say, no, this person must come on account here.
Mm.
The other country says, no, this person must come and account here.
So
no one no one denies that the person is at fault.
Mm.
But everybody wants their day in court with that person, and that sometimes complicates matters.
Yeah.
Isn't it important where they committed the crime?
Agiripa, like criminal is a criminal. They may have committed in both jurisdictions. That's exactly the point I'm making. That the crime may be the kind of crime that may have, you know, transversed both regions, or they were just a problem. They have problems that they caused on that other side, and then they have problems that they have caused in another region as well.
Like that guy, the white guy that is answering for crimes he committed in Germany and South Africa.
Yes.
Ghana, what's his name?
Even companies do the same thing.
Well,
Talis as well has that issue.
The Steinhoff guy.
The Steinhoff guy. You know, so he's answering to crimes that fall within both jurisdictions. So, unfortunately, it's just one of those. It depends on the countries, on the treaty that they entered into, and their different laws, Hogana, how do they deal with it?
Mm.
And if in their law, that side, if there's been an order like, Bushiri, I think the extradition was granted, he's appealing that.
Mm.
So now they have to let that process unfold before they can finally bring him this side.
So we are likely maybe to win that one.
We'll see if the appeal process works out for him. If it works in his favor, then
and the AK guys, AKA guys.
What is they're in Eswatini right now, right? I think do we have an outcome? I'm not sure if we have an outcome as yet.
I'm not aware of
an outcome as yet, whether or not Eswatini is going to grant the extradition as yet. So we still have to wait and see what the court in Eswatini is going to say.
Okay. Yeah. No, I was just curious with you. Hey, Shasa won.
All right.
Well, mine is a landlord-tenant dispute. I was a tenant at this place due to financial reasons. I paid half the rent of the month that I was staying in, and then the balance got paid 2 weeks later, which I had informed the landlord, and subsequently informed the landlord to say now I will be moving out due to financial reasons. I won't be able to continue occupying the apartment. Just before the month end, there were people coming to view, and as soon as I moved out, there was a tenant found for the place. Subsequently, I requested the refund for my deposit. So now the landlord is taking me from pillar to post. First told me that the money is in a 32-day account. And as I paid the balance, the remaining balance of the rent, he said they will speak to the bank so they can release the funds. So now what's my recourse on the landlord refusing to refund me my deposit?
Housing and Rental Tribunal.
Actually, it's also, it can be a long journey in this sense. He had a lease agreement.
Mm.
He had committed to a lease agreement for X amount of months. He pulls out of that. That enough right there may be enough grounds for him not to win. So they may not grant him the full deposit back.
Yeah, not the full.
But it's exactly like the 350. The trouble he's going to go into requesting this deposit back, I can tell you it's almost going to be more than the deposit you're asking for back.
With the cancellation clause, go to your lease agreement and see.
You have to check.
If the cancellation clause says that if you cancel before the end of the lease, check what the consequences are there. If there is no quote-unquote real consequence, maybe they say that instead of getting 100%, you'll get 50% or whatever. That's what you're entitled to. But go to the rental tribunal. It is free. You don't need an attorney there. Because that's what, firstly, you write them your letter or email or whatever saying, per clause mamang, you owe me my deposit based on X, Y, and Z. And remember, the deposit is supposed to be in an interest-bearing account. They cannot now come and say that there is no money or whatever the case may be. Interest-bearing is that on whatever monies that you gave as a deposit, they cannot come say they don't have money to pay, because they should be getting money on interest thing. And then if you do not get any joy, refer to the rental tribunal, rental and housing tribunal, I think it is. Yes. And then they will assist you there. And then if they agree with you, whatever order they give there is as good as a court order. Let nobody tell you any different. They have to adhere to that. There's a tendency of people when things go to ombudsmen or stuff like that, they do not adhere to those orders. They're as good as court orders. You can make make an application for an enforcement if needs be, go and attach stuff so that you can get paid your money. But first, read your contract. See what the cancellation clause says.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be, as I said, I think it's going to be tricky.
Yeah.
Because there was half of the rent paid. And I don't know. I have a feeling he's not going to come out a winner.
But from what I can gather, it sounds like he didn't finish a full month without paying the other half. He paid half, 2 weeks later, another half. And by then he'd already put in his notice. And then he was able to cover that amount. So they can't say that they missed out on a 1 month's rent because it was fully paid eventually.
And he says people moved in.
Yes, and people moved in. So they did not suffer any prejudice. And for the cancellation clause, they you always say, give me at minimum 30
notice,
days.
Notice, yeah.
Yes, that notice is 30 days. Mm. So he probably did give the notice and then paid 50% of the rent the first week or whatever. And then 2 weeks later, he paid the second. Mm. So that month was covered. Yeah, the notice period. So they would be liable to pay him out a certain amount from his deposit.
So you feel that he may get some recourse?
Yes, but he must just double check his lease, just to be sure.
Yeah, well, and that someone doesn't say, well, actually, you and I, when you left, didn't check the property that you damaged.
Now that's not a problem.
And they will, yeah.
I actually had an incident like that back in the day. And with the rental property.
And
we
come up with a store.
Yes, and they do all they the time. Do,
because they
want to... All the time.
They don't want to give
they
you
They don't
back
want to
money.
Give you back your money. We had a situation like that when we were moving on from our rental
that
place.
That globe there, ne? When you came in, was flickering, but not as much as it is now.
Exactly.
Somehow, you press too much... And it's flickering more. I'm telling you. And you know, if he's been away for as long as he's been away,
yeah.
He probably doesn't remember some of the little things.
Exactly.
But they will nitpick until the amount comes to the amount of money they need to pay.
Yep.
And there was, I don't know, that carpet was whiter than when you left.
Yes. They will find something. But if there was no real... Because that's another thing that doesn't happen, actually. There's no real checklist that is done upon entering the
You may
apartment.
Find that there was. But I have also found that even when there is a real checklist, the exit checklist...
It never happens.
It's tricky. Very tricky.
But it never happens.
Because people don't want to pay.
Mm.
People don't want
to
pay.
So what are you comparing it to in the first place? When they wanted... They never issued a water bill ever in the 3 years that we lived there. Upon return, they're like, oh yeah, by the way, here's a water bill for 3 years. Mind you, we were paying water nonetheless, but they were now being
pedantic.
Super specific. Mm. And we're like, in 3 years, where has this thing been? Oh, it was not our fault, it was the system.
It was ing.
Unfortunately for them, they didn't realize that they deal with people who deal with the law. Within 2 days, 2 weeks, sorry, our money was paid. Because there was no leg for them to stand on. So, yeah, try and see. Go to the tribunal if after you see your clause, your cancellation
fast?
Clause. Tribunals are slow. Mm. They're inundated.
Mm.
They're really inundated. But you will eventually get your money if your matter is on your favor. Like if the ruling is in your favor.
Yo, that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
So the issue of... looking at that lease before you even sign it,
mm-hmm.
I think in itself is something that is
very important.
Very important.
Yes, there's always a 7-day cooling off period. Don't feel like you're pressurized to move in because they say, oh, if you don't take it, there's so many other people who are interested. It may slip through your fingers. Okay, Let it slip through your fingers if necessary. Go get somebody to read that thing and help you understand all those things. And then if you've got questions, you've got questions, and they must amend it in accordance to whatever it is that you require so that you can understand. I remember we also had to, when we were getting offices at some stage, we're getting offices from another attorney, and there were clauses in there that were like, what do you mean I can't go in my office at 10? What if I've got an urgent application to draft and then you're saying I'm not allowed into the office? What do you mean? Stuff like that. Go through your lease. Make sure you understand it. Because if you just go in and because you're pressurized, you are going to deal with things. When it's time to leave, it's a problem.
For those who are buying homes for the first time, it's the same thing. Issue where you may find that there are structural issues, yes. For instance. Sometimes it's not just a small thing. Mm. It's a bylaw, regulation that they have not complied with.
Correct.
Maybe that wall is, I don't know, 200 meters out.
Mm.
Should you be asking for those plans?
Yes. If they're not willing to give them to you, go to the municipality and ask for the original plans and see if the extension that this house, it looks so beautiful and big now, was it approved by the municipality? What they did, was it approved? If it's not, what are you paying for? Because those issues that are remaining are going to be yours. There was a dispute in Bryanston. This person was complaining that the neighbor is using water from his tap. And then when they went to the municipality, it showed that he extended his boundary wall into the other person's property. Now he was forced to not only demolish that, but he had no access to that. It didn't belong to him in the first place.
Oh, I see.
So he's the one, after he realized that the previous neighbors before these ones moved out, Abai extended the wall.
Oh,
and Abai Kavara. But what he didn't realize is that part of that tap was still connected to other things flowing into the original house.
Mm.
So his water, the water bill, that side in the, with
was,
the,
high.
Was high. And they were like, where's this water going? Because we don't use this
they
much
had no
water.
Idea.
They had no idea. And then when they found out that the tap that this man is using
is theirs,
he then wanted to take them on and say, but no, what do you mean? That's not the case. And then when they went to the municipality, they saw that he extended the wall without any approval and into their property in actual fact. And then they were able to sue him for water usage for about 2 years.
Wow. Okay. There's always recourse.
There's always recourse. And also another thing, when you buy a property, you know how they say that the historical debt for water, electricity and whatnot comes to the person who is purchasing the property. Check. Request to see how far this person or what kind of debt you're dealing with.
Yeah.
Because there are people who are sitting there, oh my, 2 million.
That could be very high.
And then the house is worth 5 million.
That could be very high, yeah.
So make sure that, okay, if you're charging me 5 million, that too better make sure you pay the municipality and I start on a zero.
Mm.
Because now you're inheriting a debt that was never yours in the first place.
Mm.
Check that the electrical certificate is correct.
Compliant, yes.
And go and check with people who know how to check this, because people can forge documents.
All the time.
So these are the things that when you ask your real estate people.
Yes, estate agent.
Yeah, agent. They're like, yeah, no, we're compliant.
Everything's fine.
Don't worry.
Everything's
fine. And they want to pressure. Oh, no, there's so many people looking at the house, you know.
Yes, everything's fine.
Request originals. You have 7 days. In those 7 days, go and check for all of these things and bring a counter to the table.
Tammy Seng, where do people get hold of you?
People can get hold of us on email on info@dubazanaattorneys.co.za. Alternatively, they can give us a call on 087-265-8010 or send us a WhatsApp on 079-654-7523. Our office is at 37 Harley Street in Randburg.
It's always lovely seeing you. See you next week.
Next week.
Thanks, folks. We are back tomorrow at 8.
Click kaya959.co.za.
This is how we do it.
To download the Point of View podcast.